Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and our panel discussion for this morning, the 28th of February. Very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce the panel to you, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, sir. Don't ask. I've decided I'm taking a different approach. I thought the more I complained, the faster the healing would go. That turns out not to be true. So I'm going to do the other side. Okay. I'm not complaining.
All right. And you'll not complain and follow doctor's orders, right?
Yes. Foot up in the air, higher than the heart.
Yes. Takes a lot of pillows, but it's worth it.
Maybe not yet.
Well, hopefully. Associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, joins us each and every Tuesday and whenever we beg him to be here, and he's here this morning. We couldn't be more thrilled.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here, indeed.
Very nice to have you back. And director of the journalism program at UAlbany, Rosemary Armeo, is here. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
All right. Let's get a reminder. If you want to get in on our discussion, all you have to do is write, and the email address for that is panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. And we welcome your letters, and in some cases we'll read them, and in some cases we even enjoy seeing them. So we begin with, first of all, the president is going to speak tonight. And anybody want to hazard a guess as to what will come out of this?
It should be good for a laugh.
Alan, what do you think? What should we expect to hear from the president tonight in his speech before the House and Senate?
Everything is good, comma. I'm the best thing since white bread, which isn't very good, comma. I'm making America great again, comma. We have a wonderful national intelligence team together, and we need to defend this country because somehow this country is at risk. We don't have enough guns, bombs, airplanes, guided missiles, ships, although we have more than everybody else to do the job correctly. I think that's what you'll hear.
Well, a couple of things. First, I do want to mention that the speech will be given at 9 o'clock, and we'll be covering it here on WAMC, and NPR will provide coverage, so you can hear it here tonight. We should note that it is a joint session of Congress. President Trump expected to deliver the equivalent of not a State of the Union address, but the equivalent to that, a speech designed to set the course for his near-term policy agenda. And as his campaign, or his administration says, to try to calm nerves regarding the turbulent first month, uneven, I believe is the word they use. He said that so far, I don't know if you saw this, but he is giving his presidency an A so far. He's self-grading. He's giving his presidency an A, and he's giving his messaging a C or a C minus.
So he's doing well, but not telling us he's doing it well.
Right. He's not doing a good enough job. And I believe the messaging, I assume that's the media's fault, right?
The lying press.
Well, should you fire your communications team since you just gave yourself a C-minus is the question. And if I may, Joe, I'd just like to ask Mike and Rosemary, and you, of course, if you're a Democrat, what do you do tonight? The big speculation. Do you sit on your hands? Do you not applaud? Do you applaud the presidency but not the president? What do you do?
Polite applause. I think we'll hear some of that. I don't think we'll hear anybody scream out, liar, like what happened when President Obama gave his first State of the Union or one of his early States of the Union addresses. But I think it will hurt the Democrats if they boo or jeer or are noticeably nasty to him. I think they have to be polite and respectful. That would be my observation.
Yeah, if I were one of them, I would be sitting there with, you know, holding my hands over my mouth not to say anything and thinking pleasant thoughts about Russian investigations that might come soon.
Yeah, sort of do what Brie Larson did during Casey Affleck's speech last night.
There you go.
An obscure reference, but given a somewhat sordid history of Casey Affleck and sexual abuse allegations, and Brie Larson and a few others decided that they were going to sit during his, not give a standing ovation. All right, so the speech will be tonight, and the Democratic response comes from Steve Beshear. Am I right on the pronunciation of that? Beshear? He is the former governor of Kentucky, right. Deliver the Democratic response, which will look to defend the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that? No?
Well, I mean, that seems...
Well, yeah.
Many
yeah,
thoughts
ahead.
All
Sorry,
at the
Mike.
Same time.
Yeah, we all have the same thoughts or different thoughts at the same time, right? Go ahead, Alan.
Who would have ever thought, right, that the, you know, with all of their bad mouthing of the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare, that they couldn't do a thing with it. They are so embarrassed. And now a big spike has been driven between the president and the Republicans in the House of Representatives. They just don't know what to do. And of course, they have their Tea Party people who are married to this concept of destroying it. And Trump said in the most extraordinary way, whoever knew this thing was going to be so difficult and complex. Unbelievable.
He appeared on Fox and Friends this morning. He called his favorite show.
Trump was on Fox and Friends?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. I would have watched that.
He blamed former President Barack Obama for organizing opposition against him. He called the Democratic House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi incompetent and gently criticized his own press secretary for how he has handled leaks.
Wow. That's,
he is doing everything in his power. He's doing everything in his power to find an enemy.
Yes.
He can't find an enemy. This guy needs an enemy.
Well,
so
it was
the press. The press isn't really working out for him. So now maybe he's turning on his own. You know, if he's going after Spicer, that's fascinating. I don't think Spicer has much longer to, I don't mean live physically, but live as a...
I still have the 16th in the pool.
Press guy.
March 16th.
I think a bigger fight is on the horizon, and it has to do with ACA, but it's the budget overall. And what Trump is proposing is definitely not popular with Republican leadership. It's even not popular in his own cabinet. A hike for the military supposedly would help military contractors, but not so much our real military, which is what our patriotism and our allegiance is all wrapped around. His own Secretary of Defense is saying cutting the State Department to pay for the military, that doesn't help. Not all solutions are military. Paul Ryan is saying you cannot afford a military buildup, which, by the way, what is the need for that? Has that been explained yet, or is that
given?
This is what we need for ISIS, that we have to build this
Well,
up?
He's explained that until he was a young man, America had never lost a war.
Oh, that's right. I heard that.
Yes.
We're losing them all over the place.
Right. So we have to make our military bigger and better so that
this doesn't happen. You know, what's coming up is Paul Ryan's reason to live. This is his chance of a lifetime. And he has said all along that you have to pare and prune the entitlements. And please don't write that Social Security is not entitlement. I know that, but that's not what they see it as. So they want to cut Medicare and Social Security in order to bring about a total restructuring of the budget. And Trump cannot do that and keep his campaign promises. So we have a collusion coming right in that. ACA is now wrapped into that. And I think that that's why we're suddenly hearing a few voices in the Republican wilderness there saying, hey, maybe we better look into this Russian thing. I think it's being used against Trump.
Let's pause there for a moment, take a break, catch up with what we need to catch up with, and we'll be right back and continue our conversation. We welcome your letters as well. Roundtable at panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Binghamton University, home of the New School of Pharmacy and Pharmaceutical Sciences, now accepting applications for its first class in fall 2017. Binghamton.edu/pharmacy for more information. George Heigl Antiques, Boston Spa, New York, offering estate sale services, including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses, 518-396-7974. And Lori Ilvesacker, Coldwell Banker Village Green Realty, Woodstock, a professional realtor with 30 years of experience specializing in the greater Woodstock area land and home market, 845-901-6129.
I forgot one thing that the president said on his Fox and Friends speech. He was talking about about President Obama and was asked if the president, former president, was responsible for some of the protests against his policies. And Mr. Trump did agree, but he brushed it off, and he said that he thinks he's behind it, but he also thinks it's politics, adding, "And look, I have a very, very thick skin."
He is so self-unaware. He really is.
It's a very thick skin. So there you go.
Wow.
So we have the speech tonight. That'll be going on. And again, just a reminder that we will be carrying that live as it happens, beginning at 9 o'clock from National Public Radio. Now, let's go to some other things, and then we'll get to some letters before we go to a break. So the other announcement that came out yesterday was the budget, and as Rosemary pointed out, so the clash are Donald Trump and Paul Ryan headed for a clash over the budget as well as ideology. The New York Times has an article this morning, President Trump's proposal to slash domestic spending in order to preserve the two biggest drains on the federal government, Social Security and Medicare, has set up a battle to determine who now controls the Republican Party's ideology. The outcome could map the course of major challenges to come, including a revision of the tax code, a huge increase in infrastructure spending, and any effort to balance the budget. So, Alan, if you had to put your chips on red or black, where would you put them?
Okay, so I'm going to ask all of you this question. If you're Paul Ryan and you are about to be challenging the president of the United States, who is immensely popular in these congressional districts, would you fight with him or would you slink away? My answer is you'd slink away. You might find some, you know, half way of getting an agreement with him, but you would basically slink away. And I think what you'll find is if they were going to do anything to anybody, it's going to be Medicare, because, Medicaid, because the poor in this country really are not organized the way that they ought to be. And the people who depend on Medicaid are least likely to be there to fight them. So I suspect if there's any agreement, it'll be with Medicaid.
I think you're right on. I think that Ryan is not going to use this opportunity to have a full confrontation with Trump. That might come down the road, but it's a little bit early, and politically I think he's not on solid ground. I think there needs to be more separation of factions within the Republican Party, and that'll happen if Trump continues to push towards this major military spending and cut the entitlement of, well, Medicaid. Someone argues not an entitlement; it's a federal program to help states deal with the poor. But I don't think that they'll disagree about cutting Medicaid, and maybe that's what they'll focus on—the things that they agree on. It's not just time for. Yeah, I don't think he's going to do that now. Ryan is going to.
I'm less clear on it. Paul Ryan is smarter than Donald Trump. He's completely in his element when we're talking about rebalancing and restructuring the budget. Trump knows nothing about it and has plainly not spent time studying it. And Paul Ryan has endured unbelievable humiliation at the hands of Donald Trump, including even my calling him a eunuch repeatedly as sincerely felt belief. So he has to have been looking down the road for something to have endured all that. And this is it. This is his battle. And I think he will use You know, I'll help you with the appearances. You know, we'll make this look like a victory, even though we're really screwing everybody. And I will make it look like we're really, Medicaid can easily be cut and chopped by going after ACA. So they'll be putting the blame on Obama. I think that Paul Ryan may work in stages, but this is his first step. He's going to make serious inroads into the budget and work with Trump to make him think it's his idea and to make it look good to his base.
So he's not going to challenge him openly.
Alan, you don't agree?
Yeah, I don't agree. Nah. Paul Ryan, as Roseberry very perceptively just points out, has never been a man who can really stand up to Trump. I don't think he will. I think his character is such, and I believe, as Freud did, that character doesn't change. Little joke. Okay, so therefore, I think that Rosemary's just wrong. But the only way to handle this, Rosemary, would be better quarter, and time will tell.
I'll shut up for four seconds.
All right. You can write to us, roundtablewamc.org. We'll be back with Rosemary's thought right after this.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. I had to interrupt Rosemary to go to a break. Do you remember what you were going to say?
My thought? Yes. Alan was saying how wrong I was that the Speaker of the House
Paul
will
Ryan.
Just... Yes, Paul Ryan. That's the Paul I meant. I was thinking of Rand Paul. And it got twisted in my head because he's also been on the radio, too, talking about Trump policies. But I believe that he... may not back down this time because he doesn't have to do it personally. It won't be a confrontation between him and Trump. He has that Freedom Caucus. Remember the caucus that has accepted him but not very happily? All he has to do is unleash them, and Trump can't pass anything without those votes. So he has to just say, oh, you know, I got these boys here, you know. You don't.
So it'll be behind the scenes. It'll be brokering behind the scenes, and they'll be nice in public.
I can see that happening.
I do, too.
On the other hand, Alan may be completely right, and he'll cave again. I've watched him cave repeatedly over the past 2 years, so it might be, but...
Hey, Rosemary, here's my deal. I'll take my quarter in five-cent pieces or 25 pennies or one quarter.
All right. When do we decide this?
It's on you, kid.
All right. That's
whatever
a bet.
You like.
That's a bet. I'm symbolically shaking your hand over the airwaves here.
We have letters like these. Joseph writes, it is becoming more clear that we are indeed in danger of attack by terrorists. The real and very sad fact is that the attacks are coming against our own citizens by Trump supporters, as in the Kansas attacks recently.
Yes. Wow. Good. That's unbelievable what's happening. And Jewish cemeteries are under attack. Jewish community centers have not actually been attacked so far, thank God, but there have been threats into multiple centers around the country. And it's a very despicable.
Barbara writes, is it me or does anyone else feel that Trump wants a war? The nuclear buildup, the huge budget increases for military, has alienating so many formerly friendly countries, makes me curious and frightened.
Against whom? Who are we going to go to war against? Mexico?
The press.
Or the press.
Well, that's underway already, and it's yet to be determined how that's going to work
ISIS. The money among my overseas friends is there'll be a war, another war in the Middle East. Within a year.
So,
well, that's clear.
A ground war.
Yeah. That's clear. He's been saying, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. Something like that. I think you're right about that. I'm not betting a quarter on that. I think that's right. And by the way, from the very beginning, which I think ties into the Russian thing, he's been very tough on the Chinese. And that is the scariest thing.
There's a good battle to pick, huh?
Boy, that's a. That's going to be a tough war.
Somebody's got to read him a Truman book.
Yeah, exactly.
So Paul is writing, and I think makes a really interesting good point, which is we were talking about how the former governor of Kentucky will be giving the Democratic response. And he said, so who is presenting the Democratic response this evening? Is this not another leadership moment for the Democratic Party missed?
Who do you think should be giving
Well, I mean, first of all, I don't know this guy, so I can't tell you how good a speaker he is. I'm assuming he's good. And secondly, you know, they're looking at places like Kentucky, which have been showing some holes in the armor, in the Southern strategy armor, on Medicare and some of the other
That's
things.
Right.
So therefore, ACA. So therefore, I suspect, you know, they have put their heads together and come up with this fellow. The other obvious person would have been Schumer.
Schumer's not a good speaker. He's not dynamic.
I think the Warren, Chuck Schumer idea, they put that aside, and I think that was good strategy to put that aside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're right,
yeah,
Alan. That to go after someone who's not an extreme progressive, who comes from a place that's highly skeptical of the Democratic agenda as it's stereotyped, and who can still stand up to Trump, that could work out.
Yeah, and Kentucky, of course, you know, the surveys during the campaign when everyone was arguing against Obamacare, they would go to Kentucky and interview people, and how do you feel about Obamacare? Oh, I hate it. We got to get rid of it. It's terrible. But don't touch my Kentucky health. That was their local version
right.
of it.
It's
very popular there, and it's been very successful. And I think you're exactly right. This is breaking the Southern strategy.
Matt writes to us and says, about a month ago, Alan read my email asking what protective measures could be taken now to prevent the president from seizing the assets of a press outlet like the New York Times or NBC under the guise of national security. Considering the president's recent threats to find leaks, can the panel reconsider the risks and protective measures?
What was it, 52 times he's tweeted that they're the losing,
failing New York Times. Okay. Right.
Well, there was a great piece in this morning's, I think, Times, in which Warren Buffett said that the two newspapers which were assured, that was his word, assured of survival, were the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, and then said, and maybe the Washington Post.
Right.
Isn't that interesting?
Right.
And maybe the Washington Post. Jeff Bezos has plenty of money.
I think, yeah, but does he have plenty of interest, you know, or is this just a part-time hobby? It's not like he's a media company like the Wall Street Journal or the New York
Times.
It
has done very well with him, though.
It has, and I have applauded his efforts. I think the listener writing about seizure of assets, I'd be more concerned about other protesters against Trump. There are measures in several states now that would limit the right to protest. You couldn't block a street. You can't. There's all kinds of restrictions that would apply that don't right now. And one of them is that if you are caught or accused of protesting, your assets could be seized. Now that's terrifying. That would have a chilling effect. That you can go into a protest for, say, press freedom, or wear a pussy hat and go to Washington, and you end up losing your house. That might make you stop and think about whether you really wanted to
exercise
the First Amendment. Go ahead.
You know, Rosemary, there's a piece out of, I don't know where I saw it, about seizing the assets of your family.
Wow.
Now, that comes right out, as you know.
Under what part of the Constitution could you seize someone's assets for exercising their First Amendment rights? Come on. This is never going to. Even a conservative court would throw this out.
It would. But in the meantime, you would have been in jail and your family would have been terrorized.
That would last about 10 minutes.
No, it would last for the hour and a half that a demonstration goes on for, which is the real effort here. It's to stop these movements. We saw this in Washington on the day of the inauguration, when people were arrested and charged with felonies and, you know, 25 years in jail because you were in the same block with a news camera where someone was burning up a car. Do you remember that? Now, that was never going to stick. No court is going to actually do that, at least at our current time. And yet they still did it. And the whole idea is to chill. In Georgia, you have sheriff's deputies running around stopping black people and saying, you know, let me see your driver's license, you know, and training people that if you go to vote, you're going to be asked for those documents that you may not have. It's all part. This is we're growing
it's
a police
intimidation.
State.
It's intimidation.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm going into my conspiracy theory again, but that does seem to be what's going on.
Well, there was an article in the New York Times over the weekend about how emboldened the ICE agents become.
That was a scary story. And the 10,000 people that they hire, who's going to apply? Someone who just feels like, you know, I'm going to fix this problem. I'm going to go work for, immigration.
I love Mike does impressions.
There used to be something called the F test. You know about the F test? It was, you know, the fascist scale.
Okay.
We're all a little nervous.
They had the 7 second delay.
Joe had his hand over the red button. But they would do this in police departments and other places and find out whether people who naturally applied were closer to the anti-democratic. Thing. Now, I'm not saying all policemen are fascists. I'm certainly not saying that. But there are some people who get attracted to certain professions on a natural sort of basis. And that's a good point about the ICE people. And during the election, if I'm not wrong, I probably am, but during the election, I think I remember Trump getting tremendous support from the border people.
Well, he kept on saying that the entire organization, it was the organization, the union, right, that supported him. And he was using the number of all of the agents, and people were saying, well, that's not true because they don't all support him. But yes, there was support from the overall organization. Real quick, I want to read this letter, and then we'll go to a break. Chris says, good morning, panel. I disagree with the assertion that the Democrats should be silent and sit on their hands tonight. I'm all for a parliament-style raucous caucus. I think every Democrat should take every opportunity to make noise and voice their disapproval. We are deeply into the silence is complicity part of the Trump presidency. The resistance must be heard.
It's a bad tactic.
He may be right.
It's a bad tactic. Yelling out against Obama, who is a polite and classy man, is one thing. But Trump would just yell back. I mean, he would relish the chance to be attacked by the resistors.
It is a challenge for the Democrats because they cannot turn around and do what Republicans did during the Obama administration without alienating a lot of people in the middle. It might embolden the people on the left, but it's a difficult line they have to
walk. Alan?
Agree.
Well, I mean, I have great respect for what both Rosemary and Mike have just said. Nevertheless, there's another side to there's a but. The big but here is that remember that what the Republicans did worked to some degree. Now, Trump is the president of the United States. Obama was deprived of a Supreme Court pick, I think unconstitutionally, and so do a lot of other people, because he had a year to go and they didn't even bring him up and they didn't vote him up and they didn't vote him down, which is the first thing they're going to yell now when Trump appoints people. Everybody said, and there was a big debate, should we, the Democrats, behave the same way they behave towards the Supreme Court pick? Damn right, I think. I do. I think that really it was so degenerate and so disgusting and so unconstitutional that there are times you really got to hike up your pants and say, we're doing this.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back and continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Romeo, and Mike Spain make up the group this morning. We go to other stories making news, and what else we can talk about. Wilbur Ross has been confirmed. This comes to us. Last night, sometime.
Mm-hmm.
He was
confirmed
as Commerce Secretary, and billionaire, and his nomination was approved in a 72-27 Senate vote on Monday evening. Trump rode to victory in the primary and general elections last year, in part on pledges to make trade more favorable in the U.S. economy and workers. With Ross now officially in the job, he can start working on his confirmation hearing, promises to prioritize renegotiating NAFTA with Mexico and Canada and level the playing field with China, which Ross called the most protectionist major nation.
It's funny because Ross made a lot of his $3 billion, that's his estimated wealth, according to Bloomberg, by moving American U.S. companies that he owned to Mexico under NAFTA so they could manufacture parts for, you know, equipment in the U.S. that he would sell in the U.S., and it made him wealthy, or wealthier. He was already wealthy. And he's, you know, he's a beneficiary of the program that now, under Trump, he's going to try to annihilate. And you know, there's some hypocrisy there, but I do
some.
I do well I do praise one thing. I mean, he basically has resigned his positions with 38 different companies and organizations as part of the agreement that he would, you know, when he comes in as Commerce Secretary. That's a lot more than Trump has done. And you know,
I think I read he had $3 billion.
$3 billion, yeah, that's the estimate.
So he can afford to divest.
He sure can.
Yeah. It's and how old is he? He's old.
Yeah.
I should talk, but he's old.
Yeah,
what
I think
he?
He's. Yeah, actually, we have to look it up in Wikipedia to find out his age.
No, but I think he may be the oldest guy on the block there. He did give us our lieutenant governor for New York for a while.
Right. Betsy McCoy married Wilbur Ross, and their marriage ended since
right.
then, and she became Betsy Ross.
Oh, wow.
And
no,
she
sewed
right,
flags.
Betsy Ross, and she. And she was very famous for having stood up during the entire Pataki speech.
Wow!
That? The state of the state, and she is a frequent contributor to CNN and speaking on behalf of the Trump administration and as a surrogate, and I don't know how effective she is in that regard.
But Ross is 79.
Oh, he's 79 years old. You got that faster than I did.
He has a very interesting history with Trump, and it was the highlight of a program last night by Rachel Maddow, and apparently it's a big article coming out in New Yorker that I'm eagerly awaiting. He may have been involved in deals that that Russian oligarchs made with Donald Trump, and that this is a longstanding... Yeah,
Cyprus, he took over the Bank of Cyprus
it was another guy who took that. But it's a very, as these are, it's a money laundering deal,
right.
basically. And it's a really complex scheme.
Oh, just that.
Yeah, well, it's the stuff you know.
Good
that,
one, Rosemary. Good one.
Yeah, it's a money laundering
Esquire
scheme.
Esquire has something on that coming out, too.
Yeah, so I have, it may be, you know, my wishful thinking that I want them all implicated in corruption and have to leave. But Wilbur Ross, we may hear more about him in the near future.
But it was a fairly split vote. A lot of Democrats supported him.
Yeah, people said it was an easy one. Democrats said it was an easy one. Because, you know, Democrats like money also. So
Democrats like money also. That's true.
Let's go to a couple of letters. Joel writes us and says, check out the petitions on the White House site. Over 1 million signatures so far for Trump to release his tax returns. Do you think he will? Nah. Well, I think we agree.
No.
The House committee says no. We're not gonna subpoena them, which is troubling. This is the House Intelligence Committee, one of the two committees in Congress that apparently are going to look into the Russian connection rather than an independent prosecutor, which would be ideal according to the Democrats. And the head of the committee said, "Well, we haven't just seen any evidence at all." So you have a circular argument. The evidence is in his tax returns, but they're not going to subpoena the tax returns until they get the evidence.
Well, if they were confronted with the evidence, there would be an enormous risk that those tax returns might be leaked and become public. It would be if they don't see it, they can't.
That's right.
Right.
Well, as soon as anything goes to Congress, that's where the leaks are. So there's no question about that. But how fortunate that is for Trump that the proof of his being involved is in a document that his fellow party members don't want to subpoena, and there's no other way to get these documents.
Right, because if they do subpoena it, they'll see the evidence.
I don't know. I'm not putting words in your mouth, but were you about to say that you are surprised that they have not been leaked?
I am surprised they have not been leaked so far.
I am too. I was going to
during the campaign
up.
There were a couple of pages.
Yeah, yes. The New York Times suddenly got an envelope in their mailbox with they were key pages. No question about it. But I really thought by now we would see more.
Yeah, where's Marla Maples when you need her?
Alan,
well paid.
Alan Williams writes, I will not be watching the speech before the Clown College, a.k.a. Congress. Too wild for me. I think I'll find a nice Mardi Gras party to go to. It's Fat Tuesday,
That's right.
by the
it's
way.
Fat
yes.
Tuesday.
By the way, why isn't the panel dressed for Mardi Gras? Did you forget?
I got a purple tie.
Yeah. That's good.
I went to a Mardi Gras party this weekend, and I'm full of bread pudding and pralines. It was
very
great.
Good.
Well, you guys should go to Jonas Shartok on the Facebook. He lives in New Orleans, and he is a chronicler of every second line and every march that there is in and it's all there for you
wow.
to see.
Well,
too much for me, but there's a lot of it.
Too much for me.
Will he befriend me if I ask Jonah to be my friend? Will he befriend me, Alan? Or have you said too many bad things?
No.
Okay. No, Jonas would do that.
He likes you a lot.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he likes you.
Or he will after I email him.
Even Murray barks at me viciously.
Sick him.
John writes: given the definition of terrorism as using terror as a tool for political gain, will the Kansas murderer and those threatening Jewish communities be charged as terrorists? If not, is race a factor in whether to bring terrorist charges?
Of course it is.
Well, it's certainly a hate crime. We could talk and talk about this awful tragedy in Kansas, but it's the type of thing that you can't help but feel people are being emboldened to act by what's been going on this last few weeks.
The suspect went into Absolutely. Another bar and boasted of taking out Middle Easterners.
Middle Eastern people.
Because, of course, he doesn't know geography, but it's awful. And they are emboldened. And nothing, very little at least, is being done at the White House level to stop it.
We also got this letter from Bill, who says, have you been discussing the Trump phenomenon as related to the overall current worldwide movement to the right?
Yes.
Well,
yes,
there's some belief it actually is a warning.
We certainly have. We certainly have. And we I've said it a number of times. We see Angela Merkel in real trouble in Germany right now. We see Madame Le Pen doing extraordinarily well in France in the polls, leading in some of the polls, I believe. We've talked about all of that. And now even in Sweden, which was a big joke a week ago, you find this sort of pull up the gangplank philosophy and Brexit. Let's not forget Brexit.
And may I point out that in every one of those places Alan just named, there has been Russian involvement. Money is going to the candidates to the right, and Russian media, both externally and internally, is pushing the candidates from the right. They're meddling, just as they did in the United States. Wake up!
And here is the KGB colonel. There's something unbelievable about this. It'll all be in my novel, you know. But here's the KGB colonel pushing right-wing causes around the world. Unbelievable.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to go over to news with our dear friend Ray Graff and find out what's happening. And we'll take a little break. When we come back, we'll talk about other things that are making news. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We will just have a letter or two. We'll read those, and then we'll go on to some other topics making news that we want to talk about. We begin with Dick, who says, Mike asked what part of the Constitution would allow Trump to seize assets of press outlets. Is it the same part of the Constitution that allowed Lincoln to suspend habeas corpus? He has already said we are in an emergency. Anyone on that? Okay.
You know, Joe, I wanted to say something really quickly.
Yes, sir.
A number of people on a different subject, very quickly, a number of people have been saying that that the panel wasn't wearing the Mardi Gras outfits. And
yes.
I just wanted to point out that anybody can watch the panel, and you can do that. A lot of people still don't know it when I mention it to them, that you can watch it on your computer by going to WAMC.org. I just think it's important to remind everybody about that.
Live stream, and yeah, you know what? When you forget it's there, that's when it's scary.
It's very big brotherish.
Look what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's fortunate our conversations during the break do not get put out over the air.
Unless, of course, you can read lips.
To go back to search and seizure, the Fourth Amendment, as any other constitutional right, could be suspended in time of a war or other emergency, but I don't think it's just Donald Trump making one of his speeches that even his supporters don't pay complete attention to and his handlers have to translate the next day. I don't think that's enough that a court would say, oh, yeah, right, no Fourth Amendment anymore.
We also got this letter from Josh, who said yesterday's show gave me Libby Rosemary flashbacks from primary season. Tom Perez, one of the only DNC chair candidates who wouldn't say the primary was rigged, and obviously at that was pretty much endorsed by the ladies on the panel. They basically told Bernie supporters to get over it. I hope the sand is at least warm on your heads. Do some research on Perez as Labor Secretary. Never going to stop listening, though, and feel better, Alan.
You're not a real progressive if you're calling us ladies.
And Deb says, with our military budget bigger than the next several countries combined, I don't see a need for an increase. Perhaps if Trump did his patriotic duty and paid some taxes toward the national services we all share, that could help. Maybe he could also not charge the American public rent to have security housed with half his family at Trump Tower at over $500,000 a day. That money could go to national services instead of into his own pocket. All right. Now for some other stories, and I want to go into two media stories at the risk of stepping on the Media Project's toes here, but I thought they were interesting stories. A lot of, obviously, that the Mike alluded to this earlier, obviously the president has been very critical of the, well, of a lot of media, but of course the New York Times at top of that list. So the Washington Post took it upon themselves to analyze the New York Times and to see how accurate they are.
Interesting.
The headline, "If the New York Times is so inaccurate, where are all of its corrections?" That is the headline. And President Trump's team got into another fight with the New York Times over the weekend. Trump attacked the newspaper again Sunday, apparently after learning that it was running an ad during the Oscars. "For the first time, the failing New York Times will take an ad, a bad one, to help save its failing reputation. Try reporting accurately and fairly." That, according to the president, February 26, 2017. It was the, as Mike mentioned, 51st occasion on which Trump had tweeted about the failing New York Times, and one of the few in which he pointed to a cause for that imminent failure, the Times' inability to report accurately and fairly. The day prior, President Trump's press secretary, Sean Spicer, called out just an egregious error by the Times that it had gotten his birthplace wrong. For the record, New York Times can't even get where I was born right and failed
to Do we know where he was born?
No, he refused to answer the question.
He won't say.
Russia! Won't say. They used the place that he grew up as opposed to where he was born.
Yes.
But also Trump called the New York Times evil. I love that. Yeah. Evil.
Want to support what you were saying. Spicer refused two calls from Glenn Thrush of the New York Times to talk about the story, in which presumably that might have come up. Where's your birthplace?
So they say in this
big error.
Mm-hmm. In the 47 examples we found articles about Trump, excluding opinion pieces or wire stories, 15 were typographical, involving small corrections to titles or dates that seem likely to have been copy editing misses. An additional 27 were minor factual corrections, such as incorrect locations or photo captions. Among them, the paper corrected the nature of Dippin' Dots in its story related to Sean Spicer's tweeted comments about the frozen confection. Only 5 involved significant corrections of fact, including an incorrect number related to Obamacare and a citation of fake tweets from Michael Flynn. In no case was the substance of any of the articles we reviewed rescinded. And they list them in the article.
The new Quinnipiac poll shows that 37% of Americans, let me repeat that, 37% said that they believed President Trump's version of news rather than the news media.
That's a high number.
Yes, it is a very high number. So we have now quantified P.T. Barnum's saying that you can fool all of the people some of the time and some of the people all of the time, but not all the people all the time. So it's 37% you can fool all the time.
Well, that 37% has an interesting ring to it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Isn't that
the
core?
It has to support, doesn't it?
That's the core. And, of course, I don't want to mention particular names in history in the 1930s, but the same thing was going on then about the press. You know, so that the hardcore people who were supporting certain dictators were in fact unchangeable also. It doesn't mean that it's right. It just means that our way, right or wrong.
So while the Washington Post was looking at the New York Times and examining their relationship with the President of the United States, the New York Times, meanwhile, higher up on the East Coast, decided that they would look at the relationship between President Trump and CNN. He is a favorite target of President Trump's ire, the leader of a television network that the White House routinely accuses of peddling fake news, and a contentious figure in his own right. We are talking about Jeffrey Zucker, who is the president of CNN. We should note that he and the president once had a close relationship. Mm-hmm. They no longer do. Our folks are just doing their jobs, Mr. Zucker declared at a recent lunch with journalists who prodded him about the slings and arrows that Mr. Trump has gleefully lobbed his way. They wear those insults as a badge of honor. A battle-tested executive, Mr. Zucker has rarely shed a stride from a fight. He also never faced an antagonist quite like this. Minutes after Mr. Zucker made those comments, Mr. Trump was on television screens across the country attacking Mr. Zucker by name from the East Room of the White House. In an extraordinary news conference, Mr. Trump denounced CNN as an organ of anger and hatred and accused Mr. Zucker directly of bias. In an era of hostility and suspicion toward the news media, perhaps no battle was more pitched than between Mr. Trump and CNN. And we should note that also, of course, CNN's reporter barred, one of several journalists barred, from attending a briefing with John Spicer on Friday.
And Trump repeats.
Is it my
Go ahead, Alan. I'm sorry.
Was it my impression that CNN, under attack by Trump, is actually getting better and
yes.
better?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
I find this incredibly ironic. If you may recall, I boycotted CNN during the election
coverage. Corey Lewandowski.
Hiring his campaign manager while he was still on the payroll of Trump. Jeffrey Lord was unleashed on the world through CNN panels in which
still
his
like
little...
him weirdly. Okay. I don't know. I find him vaguely charming. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. And Alan has a crush on Kellyanne. You guys are secret Trumpers, aren't you?
Not at all. I just think he's a fairly articulate spokesman compared to many of the others.
Sleeveless blonde wonders. Yeah.
And he also admits when he is put into a corner, he admits that he has been put into a corner. And I think he must be a nice guy because they keep on asking him back and they do seem to genuinely like him. But anyway, that's my
a lot of people,
my two cents.
A lot of people blame CNN for Trump's rise to power because
right.
they broadcast, you know,
yes,
unedited
endlessly.
Hours and hours of Trump speeches.
Which you can argue they still do daily with the press briefings, right?
Yep.
Right.
Why are those on?
I need to answer Rosemary's terrible accusation about my having a crush on Kellyanne.
I see you light up every time we mention her name, Alan.
There is something fascinating about her demeanor, you know. However, and I might have, you know, some kind of, I don't know what you would want to call it.
A fascination?
But I can
infatuation,
say,
perhaps?
Fascination. But I can say it is not a healthy one.
No.
Was Twitter fair to attack her by kneeling on the couch
Office? I was just going to bring that up. That is crazy. She's taking pictures of the Black Caucus in the Oval Office with the president. She gets up on the couch, presumably her shoes were off, and kind of kneels and leans over so that she can take the shot she wants. And she's getting all this guff about how that was inappropriate and she's out of line. Out of all the things she's done, I mean,
right,
supporting alternative facts give her guff for, but not kneeling on the couch for a better picture.
She took off her shoes, for goodness sake.
In the Oval Office. Well, so did Monica Lewinsky, probably.
Oh, okay. That's the connection.
I ain't saying nothing.
Yeah, that just took a turn, but a good
point. Sorry. I forgot where I was. Yeah.
There are many more legitimate issues.
The one other thing I want to mention about this article is this this up and down relationship between Mr. Trump and Mr. Zucker. So they're both TV addicts, and they watch this stuff constantly. And it was Mr. Zucker who put Donald Trump into prime time in The Apprentice. And so now there's history between these two gentlemen.
Oh, Trump says he actually got Zucker his job at CNN. I mean, he claims that. He says he suggested it to the head of CNN when they were looking for a new president or a new news leader, and that's why he got the job.
Mr. Zucker said the last time they spoke was December, which was not a good conversation, he says, and the dispute has bled beyond questions of coverage into the realm of corporate intrigue. Time Warner, CNN's parent company, is preparing for a takeover by AT&T that requires approval by Mr. Trump's Justice Department. What will happen there, do you think?
Don't you get the idea that Zucker is actually having fun?
Oh yes.
I mean that may be the way to counter the Trumpism here. You know, everybody else said, oh my God, he said something about me or did something. I've been named, but here Zucker seems like a pig in whatever it is that
he's happy.
The pig is in.
Yes. Well, he noted that Trump. The
what
other
is
day,
it that a pig is in?
Yeah.
Poke.
Well, whatever.
Poke.
Right. Well, Trump tweeted that CNN is unwatchable, but then Zucker pointed out in order to know that you'd have to be watching. You know?
Yeah, of course.
Lots of jokes.
The network chief finds himself, and this is what you were referring to earlier, the network chief finds himself in the unusual position of being castigated by Trump loyalists just months after some Democrats and Republicans attacked him for enabling Trump's rise. At a forum in Harvard in December, Mr. Zucker was jeered for airing Trump rallies unedited and hiring the candidate's former campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, as a commentator. Yeah. Both supporters and detractors of Mr. Zucker say he can handle and even relishes the harsh spotlight to what we were just talking about a moment ago.
And did you see that The Apprentice was canceled?
I did not see that.
Yeah,
I missed
can't
that
compete
sort of...
with the real life White House, well oiled machine.
Let's probably finish up this morning by talking about the Justice Department dropping a key objection to a Texas voter ID law. The Justice Department on Monday dropped a crucial objection to Texas's strict voter identification law, signaling a significant change from the Obama administration on voting rights issues. The Republican-led Texas legislature passed one of the toughest voter ID laws in the country in 2011, requiring voters to show a driver's license, passport, or other government-issued photo ID before casting a ballot. The Obama administration's Justice Department sued Texas to block the law in 2013 and scored a major victory last year after a federal appeals court ruled that the law needed to be softened because it discriminated against minority voters who lacked the required IDs.
I can't believe it. Jeff Sessions, during his confirmation hearings, pledged that he would stand up for voters' rights and access to the ballot. So I don't understand why his Justice Department is doing this.
He told a judge on Monday that it was withdrawing its claim that Texas enacted the law with a discriminatory intent.
He's been a racist for years. That's why he's doing this. I think that the courts will still uphold the idea. The case doesn't go away. The Texas officials are still bringing it, and I hope it will be upheld. However, there's a notice here to resistors that one of the areas that they must get involved in is voter registration back in the 60s, where we're going to take
people to the polls.
Not to the polls, but to the Department
to
the, of Motor Vehicles.
Yeah.
Department
mm-hmm.
of Motor Vehicles and get driver's license or whatever the equivalent is for people who don't drive. The studies show conclusively that when you demand ID, especially government-issued ID, as Texas is doing, it's minorities, it's Democratic-leaning voters that don't have them. So it's up to Democratic activists to get to work on this. There's ways to combat this. I think it's horrible that it is happening, but we must acknowledge that new actions are needed.
Go ahead, Alan.
Just one more thing on that. It's really more than that. As we've talked about it, Rosemary and I were in a class the other day. Neither of our class, but we were there, and we asked whether young people were in the class were voting, all of whom were able to vote, and about three or four hands went up in the room. There's got to be an intense effort at letting people know what they have at stake here, because otherwise you'll never win another election.
Yes, that's right, Alan.
So we have 42 letters, I just counted them, 42 letters on one topic that we've discussed that, of course, is the most important thing that we have discussed.
The kneeling.
Nope.
Ah.
You attributed, you can fool all of the people some of the time and some of the people all of the time, but you cannot fool all of the people all the time as P.T. Barnum, and it was Abraham Lincoln.
I thought it was
Lincoln. No. Really?
Yeah. Well, you know, they're very similar.
Wow.
Shame on you, Michael.
Now,
I still haven't forgiven Lincoln for that habeas corpus thing, you know?
There was that thing.
So I'm doing this on the fly, so I apologize if I get this wrong, but there's
a sucker born every minute.
There's a whole thing on whether who said it first.
And
we should add, so Lincoln's in there, Barnum's in there, and so is H.L. Mencken. So
Mencken might say that.
What a cry, yeah. Different,
say it more cynically, though, somehow.
One of the most famous sayings attributed to Abraham Lincoln is about deception. I was astounded to learn that there's no solid evidence that Lincoln actually used this adage talk about the provenance. So there's a whole thing, but anyway, there's some evidence that you are correct. There's some evidence that the listeners are correct. So I just want to point that out because
thank you for the correction.
That is the thing.
It's important to have everything accurate.
That is the thing people are writing about, just for the record.
Okay.
And if he didn't say it, Joe, he should have said it.
Well, because they say that it was first came into print in 1885, but Lincoln died in 1865.
Yes, we know that.
Yeah, so it came later. But anyway,
when did P.T. Barnum die?
Well, I haven't gotten that far in the article. I wanted to pay attention to the show for the moment, but that was. But I'll get back to you.
I'm a simultaneous researcher,
trying to going back to the days of the reference librarian, right? Yes. Let's see. We did get other letters about things other than P.T. Barnum. Although maybe we didn't.
Nothing about Kellyanne Conway?
Trump tweeted about the New York Times at 8 minutes after it was shown on CNN, a channel that Trump claims not to watch. That was one. And Stephen says to us, I really enjoy listening to you, but I'm not going to upgrade my older computer just to see you. Presently, I'll have to leave all that on Mardi Gras purple tie stuff to my imagination, theater of the mind. So there you go.
That's well put.
Nice.
All right. We are out of time. My thanks to everyone for being a part of the program. Rosemary and Mike and, of course, Alan. Keep it above your heart, sir.
Above my heart.
Above your heart.
I'm doing it.
Excellent.
I'm doing it.
All right. We will reconvene tomorrow morning, and the roundtable will continue after this short break.